Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. Hey, by the way, we are streaming live, if you're about to get out of your car, on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes, so check us out there. We talk on this program a lot about the joys and the fun of business, and I don't ever want to get completely away from that. There is another side to it I think is probably not discussed very often, and that's the struggle that running a business can do. And I sometimes think people run into business situations without thinking about that, and they sort of have unrealistic expectations of what's going to happen in that regard. I remember when my wife and I, and I've told this on the air before, when my wife and I first bought a home up in North Georgia, there was a lady up there that ran a little restaurant that we really enjoyed going to, and going there several times, I got to know her, one of these cool little mountain-type restaurants, and I was in there one time, I said, this is really a nice restaurant, and she said, well, hey, do you want to buy it? I said, no, I don't really want to be in the restaurant business. I said, I'm surprised you don't want to sell it. And she told me this story, which she said was, this is her and her husband had been visiting in the mountains many, many times, had come by this restaurant. They thought, it'd be fun to have a restaurant, a little restaurant up here in the mountains. They bought the restaurant from the existing owner, but to her, I guess, shock and surprise, it didn't turn out exactly like she planned. Number one, she found that she was having to spend a lot more time there than she ever envisioned, being there, earlier before daylight in the morning to get ready for breakfast. And it was just her and her husband running it. They didn't really hire anybody else, so the idea was they were there all the time. Very hard to take any kind of vacation. To take a vacation means shutting the business down. It didn't really have the revenues to support that. You can make a living there if you worked at it by basically doing everything yourself full time. You can make a living at it, but it didn't offer much more than that. And in fact, after a while, her husband had gotten kind of tired of it, and he actually took a job back down in Atlanta and sort of left it with her. And she said, it become quite a burden for them. Well, I think that story writ large is a story of probably a number of small businesses. And even in my own experience, I never had quite the situation that she did. But about 2 years after forming my business, which had been a sort of a dream of mine all my life, I kind of hit a wall on it a little bit. Everyone reads about the high failure rate of small businesses, but there's no doubt in my mind that at least a large portion of those failures comes from founder burnout, where you just get tired of doing it. In fact, almost every business owner that I know has said at one time or other in their career, hey, this ain't worth it. I was making more money back when I was working for so-and-so, and I didn't have all these headaches. And like I said, I went through that about 2 years after forming our company. It just seemed like, despite all my best efforts, I just could not see the light at the end of the tunnel. And my enthusiasm was sort of beginning to wane quite a bit, and in fact, sort of fading further into the past. Just keeping up, I think, with the details of sort of running a business by yourself with only one or two other employees, and the personnel problems I was having, having to deal with financial issues, having to deal with sales, having to deal with customer demands, vendor problems, it consumed all the energy I had. I had no energy left, and I really at that time, although we were doing okay, I wasn't making any more money actually in terms of personal income than I was making when I worked for the company that I left to come and form this business. And I found myself sort of, maybe for the first time in my life, really not, and really one of the only times in my life, just not sleeping well at night because I was sort of in depression. Well, here's what I did about it. I actually went to talk to some folks about it. I'm fortunate enough to have good friends, and I went to see a pastor that's a good friend, and he sort of gave me some good advice about a few things. I remember that in the middle of that, I had another good buddy that called up and he was very enthusiastic about starting a new business, and he called me to sort of get some, affirmation of that. But he called me at a real bad time. And I basically told him that starting a business was a really bad idea. He should stay where he was. Now, looking back at that, and fortunately, he didn't take my advice, and he ended up starting a pretty good business. But looking back at that, that is so out of character for me to do something like that. And I've never done it before, but it just, again, just shows you how worn down I had gotten at doing the business. And here's how I sort of got out of that. Number one, I had some people really encourage me, and we're going to talk today on the program about that, really encourage me. I also had some people that cared enough about me to talk very straight with me. And what they basically said was, the business is important, but it cannot be the most important thing in your life. You've got to put it in its place. And, your happiness, and this is just a little philosophical thing for any of us in a spiritual kind of thing, happiness is not business. You can't make business your happiness. You've got to have other things. And again, by talking to pastors and praying my way through this and really just getting some great and very direct advice from some people that cared about me, what I basically did was pull back from the business and say, okay, this is all I'm putting into this. This is it. I'm not laying awake at night worried about this business. I'm not working every Saturday and Sunday in this business. I'm backing out. And if the business makes it, it makes it. If it doesn't make it, it won't make it. And you know, the crazy thing is, when I did that and backed out of it and sort of came back to my senses in a way, I began to regain my enthusiasm, the business actually began to prosper. We began to grow when I did that. It's a great lesson about that. It's a great lesson in that people need to understand the struggle of starting a business, something you need to always be able to do that. You know, one of the ways to encourage yourself is to encourage other people. I love John Maxwell. He's written a number of books, and I've heard him speak a number of times, and I met him in a casual way a couple of times. John has a saying that he uses all the time. It's called adding value. I love the term, although I realize it's, strict interpretation, it's not exactly right. What you're doing is bringing out value people already have. You can't really add value to anybody. But nonetheless, the idea is that you add value. And what you really are doing, like I said, is you're sort of pulling the value out of them. And one way you do that is just by recognizing people, treating them as equal people, and treating them as people that are important. You know, nobody wants to be the kind of person that everyone just ignores. No one wants to be that. Everyone has intrinsic value. And so when you add value to them, you basically bring out those intrinsic values. And when you make a point of encouraging other people, what happens is you become encouraged yourself. Maxwell wrote a blog some years ago, and he gave like several little ways to accomplish this sort of in a practical way, how to go around adding value to people. And I want to share those with you. I think there's seven of them. But the first one is to be grateful. I've often said I've never met any worthwhile person that wasn't a thankful person. I've just never met anybody like that. Because being thankful or being grateful sort of puts your ego back in check, because what it's saying is I'm thankful for what I have. I didn't do everything to deserve it. And this is not the kind of President Obama, you didn't build that thing. But the idea is none of us are successful all on our own. Almost all of us have had some steering events in our lives, and it could have been our parents, it could have been people we worked with, or whatever, that brought us along to where we are. And we learned a few things, some hard lessons. And as a matter of fact, even some of the best lessons we learned, and I'm going to talk about that before the program's over today, some of the best lessons and some of the best learning times we ever get into are when things are not going that well. That's when we sort of we pick up the skills oftentimes. During that, we pick up mindsets that really will serve us very well. You know, in my own case, I was thinking about this in the last week or two here. When I was in I was in the U.S. Coast Guard for 4 years, back in the late 60s, early 70s. And, the guy, I went to a tech school there, to a technical school. And, you know, the instructors in that tech school who were hardly great philosophers or anything of that sort, but just their way of teaching, which was harsh, very harsh. You know, you don't do it right, you go run laps or do push-ups. So it was a very harsh way of teaching. But I benefited a great deal from that. And in fact, it's had a great deal to do with success in my career, what I learned, and not only the actual electronics that I learned back in those days, but the idea of learning how to learn and almost develop a love for learning, which has suited me very well. Some of the people I worked for, there's a number, I'm early in my career where I got in the electronic motor drive business. I worked for two guys that taught me that business. But even prior to that, working for some other people, working in a television station, where I was around some super techs that taught me a lot of things about how to do things and how to manage business and how to sell and how to present yourself, things of that sort. People that you get to work with, that many of whom, I'm old enough now, I have people that I've worked with for or used to work with, decades ago, and I stay up with them, and they have added value to my life. The fact that they've been encouraging to me, and they're people I can call up and ask advice of, and I'm interested in what they have to say about things, and I hear their life stories, and their stories, make me a better person. Even people I don't know that write books, like Maxwell, who I mentioned a while ago, or a guy I'm particularly fond of, Jim Collins, guys of that sort. And something you can think about, I think, perhaps, is who in your life has been a great influencer in your life and encourages you. And, when we look back at the most pleasant times of our lives and the most satisfying times of our lives, there's almost always going to be some people involved with that, not just things, not just business, but people. And the lesson to learn from that is that we can do that. And what Maxwell says is to be grateful for that. And by being grateful for that, that encourages you to share that with other people. We don't succeed alone, so make it your calling to help other people be successful the same way. And along with that, that was number one, is be grateful. Number two, Maxwell says, to put other people first. We all know to do that. Jeffrey Gitmer and many other sales gurus will tell you that if you enter a relationship, even a sales relationship with somebody in a what can I get out of it situation, number one, that attitude will show through in your relationship. It will, in that business dealing, it will not be successful for you. You've got to put other people's first. Think of what I can do to help this person. Zig Ziglar is very famous for saying you can have almost anything you want in this life if you will just help enough other people get what they want in this life. It's a great thing to do. A lot more to come on the program today. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We're talking about we've been talking about the struggles of business, and we sort of segued in the last segment into encouraging other people. I'm going to continue on with that. I'm sort of using a little bit of the John Maxwell blog on the seven ways to sort of develop a mindset for helping to grow other people. We talked about first of being grateful, being thankful, and recognizing those around you. By the way, it's never a bad idea to perhaps you haven't ever thought about this in a long time, if somebody has really been influential in your career and has helped you, wouldn't hurt to perhaps send them a note or look them up on Facebook or something and send them a blurb and tell them that, because a lot of times they don't know that. Now that way you're encouraging them. Number two is the idea goes along with that is putting other people first. Put people first. That means people are more important then your strategies are more important than equipment in your business and inventory, things of that sort. In a business, the people there are the most important thing. Now, you hear people giving lip service to this all the time. Our employees are our most valuable asset. You hear that a lot. But, saying that and then not acting like that within your own business just makes your employees think that you're a hypocrite. So you need to do that within your own business and without your business, even with vendors and other people. Is it when you give to build other people up, when you add value to them, what happens is they're then able to add value to other people. That's sort of a cycle. By us building up other people, when we do that to people, we are showing them that they are valuable. We're basically making a statement that they're valuable and they're worthy of great growth. So you're sort of giving people a reason to do that. Zig Ziglar. I've quoted him already, but he's famous, also famous for saying he has a lot of sayings. But Ziggler was famous for saying you don't build a business, you build people, and they build a business. Well, that's true. Spend your time investing in people. The other thing is that don't let Maxwell's third point is don't let your stuff own you. That is such an easy trap to fall into, isn't it? When we allow our stuff to own us. A guy was joking, they were talking about this, and said, we Americans, we buy so much stuff that we end up having to rent a storage area to put our stuff in so we can buy more stuff. And we really do that. You know, the idea you want to, I want to own a bigger house. Okay, fine. You get a bigger house. And all of a sudden, you know, when you used to have Saturday afternoons free, now you've got to be taking care of this big house you've got now. Or we'd like to have dogs. Well, all of a sudden you've got these dogs, and all of a sudden you don't own the dogs, they own you. And that's true with anything, and it's certainly true in a business. Your business can own you. I gave some earlier talking about where I ran into, very much became, got into that situation about 2 years into our business, and I had to really pull myself out of that with the help of some friends and some others, is the idea that you cannot allow things to own you. You must own them. You know, you can take the stuff you own, and you can use it as an asset to make this world a better place. That's the proper use of things that you own. And you can do that regardless of how much or how little you have. You don't require a lot to do that. And we should never just take pride in the things we own. It's easy to do that. And it doesn't bring joy or long-lasting benefits. I think very often with this. You know, have you ever had the experience of buying a new car? And, you know, when you got the new car, the first day or two, you're so proud of that car, and you're thinking about it, but how long does it take before that car just becomes another way of getting to work? And really, you're not that proud of that car anymore. It's just, even though it's still a nice car, everything's fine about it, but now it's worn off. And that's the whole problem with making things, pretending they're important. They really, in the long term, are not. And that's also true of your business. And it's certainly true in a business sense, as far as a business management, business leadership sense, is don't take advantage of other people. Keep them first. Don't make your things you own more important than the people around. Now, the other point Maxwell makes, which is a sort of an odd point, he says, don't let people own you. I mean, don't let other people own you. You know, there are some people that if you allow them, they're going to own you. They're going to run your life for you. And you know, have you ever thought about the person that's giving is the person really in charge, not the person that's taking? You ever thought about that? And we've always had a saying in sales about, you know, when you go into a sales situation, the person that talks the most, or in a negotiation type situation, very often the person that does most of the speaking is the person losing the negotiation. Have you ever thought about that? That's wise business practice. When you just, speak softly, listen a lot more than you speak, you're much more likely to come out ahead in a negotiation than you are if you go in there and do all the talking, because the other guy is going to sit there. I had a great boss out in Texas that used to that taught me that. I would go into him, and I'd try to get him to do something in the company, and I would talk to him, and I would go in there with this great, I thought, a great presentation, and I just babble on for about 30 minutes, and he would say very little, and then he'd nod at me a few times, and I'd get up and leave thinking I had talked him into that, and the next day nothing's happened. I'd go and say, I thought we agreed. He said, I didn't say a word. He said, you did all the talking. Well, that's a lesson to be learned there. You know, if you want somebody to agree to something, you need to hear them agree to it. Don't do all the talking and get up, but don't let people. So that's the thing he's got there. Be grateful. Put people first. Don't let stuff own you, and don't let people own you. And along with that, define success as sowing, not reaping. That's another way of saying, you've probably all seen these posters around where life is a journey, or success is a journey, not a destination. I think most of us probably, in an intellectual sense, would acquiesce to that. But I think in an emotional level, we all back off that. But it is true. You know, some of the most enjoyable, even looking back in marriage, Vicki and I talk about it, some of the most enjoyable times in our marriage that we can look back on were times when we were not doing all that well financially. We were struggling a little bit financially. But we were having a great fun as a married couple, sort of working our way through these things. And that story is repeated very, very often by other people in relationships. And you know what? A lot of guys, when they talk about their business, and if you'll get them to talk about it and their eyes kind of light up, it will be during some rough times in that business. That's what they'll talk to you about. And although they wouldn't want to go back to them, they certainly wouldn't want to do that. But the success of that business was that journey. That's what taught them what to do. And they took great pride in that and had great happiness out of that struggle and out of that So the idea is sowing, not reaping. If you live your life with an intention of making a difference in other people's lives, your life will be a lot more full than it will be if you spend your life taking from other people. Nobody does well in that. You know, the other thing about sowing is some of us, and we all have fallen into this trap, I think, you can sow with the idea of getting a quick return back on things. You know, investing is one of those things. I've dabbled off and on in investments and stocks and all that kind of stuff all my life. And, you know, it is possible, it's possible that you can get rich very quick. I guess you can win the lottery, or let's say, or something. And every now and then you do sort of hear stories of people that just really almost overnight got rich. Now, I'll just tell you right offhand, most of those stories are bogus. If you really go look at that, they spent a long time getting ready for that moment. But it, occasionally it does happen. It does happen. Somebody's got a product or something that just takes off. It just happens to be the right place, right time, and it takes off. But, you know, I view that kind of like getting struck by lightning. I mean, there are people who get struck by lightning every year, too. You're not likely to get struck by lightning. And the way to be successful when you sow is to expect a long-term return. That should be your expectation. Sow for the long term. And don't be disappointed when you don't get a quick return on it. You sort of sow, and you got to be prepared to harvest when it's time to harvest. And that may be some time for you. All of us need to be able to put in, pay the dues of starting a business. You know, if you're starting a brand new business, you may have to pay some dues to get there. But don't be discouraged. A harvest time will come. By the way, we are streaming live, as I like to tell us, on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie. Right back. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking about, we've been talking about the struggle, perhaps, in business. Also talking about encouragement. And we're going to talk in just a few minutes here about, okay, your business is down. What do you do about it? I want to stay on this encouragement thing just for a moment here. I'm sort of quoting a blog from John Maxwell. I'm going to run right quick through the 7 steps. He said to develop a mindset of encouraging other people, adding value to other people, which will pay big dividends for you, not only in your business life, but in your life. Period. The first one he says is be grateful. Number two, put people first, other people first. Number three, don't let your stuff own you, a big one for most of us Americans. Number four, a little unusual, don't let other people own you. Add value to people, don't let them own you, though. Define success as sowing, not reaping. In other words, I had said that's kind of like a success is a journey, not a destination kind of thing. Number six, focus on self-development, not self-fulfillment. Here's the deal. Self-fulfillment means doing what I enjoy most and will receive the most strokes for doing, while self-development simply means doing what I'm talented and uniquely fit to do that becomes my responsibility. And here's the deal. If we focus on self-development, we ultimately show that growing ourselves allows us to grow others. And regardless of our situation, we can always grow ourselves. So we should take advantages for self-development. In other words, don't live a life strictly of pleasure. Take the idea of developing yourself so that you can, instead of being interested in immediate gratification type things, develop yourself for the long term. Number seven, and finally, he says, keep growing to keep giving. And whenever people stop actively learning and growing, the clock has started ticking down. You know, here's the deal. While you're alive, you need to live till you die. It's just that simple. And successful people do that. They live until they die. And it doesn't mean that you can't ever retire. It doesn't mean that you don't do, perhaps you can change course somewhere. You've been doing, accounting all your life, and now you want to do something else. Okay, fine. Do it. I've got a good buddy that retired as a civil engineer long ago, and I ran into him. And he said, I asked him what he's doing. He said, I'm working in a medical clinic now. I said, what the heck are you doing in a medical clinic? He said, well, you know, I was a medic in the military before I went to college. And I always liked it. So I went back and got some certification he had to have. And now I'm working in a medical clinic, retired from civil engineering. And I really enjoy it. Just something different. But again, he's helping people. It's what he wanted to do. He kind of developed himself. And here he's still helping and building other people. Look, encouraging people at work always pays dividends. Let me give you a few hints about that. there's some things you can do that will absolutely insult the people that work for you. They will just insult them. And here's one of them. If you want just an absolute mediocre workforce, unmotivated, make sure they know you don't trust them. That's right. You want a mediocre group of people, just be sure they know that you don't trust them. And you know, when people get like that, they become experts at kind of just being there. They don't do any work. They're just there. And you know, today's a special where a lot of work is done on a computer and so forth. It's very easy for an employee just to be there and not doing anything at all. They're just there. And you not trusting them really encourages them to do that. And if you want talented people in your company, and I would hope that you would want that, then you need to tell them they shine. If you don't want talented people, if you want to run talented people off out of your company, never do that. Never tell them they're shining. I think some leaders actually fear that the employee will get a big head or something if they tell them they're doing a good job, and they kind of back off doing it for that reason, not understanding the devastation that produces inside your organization and what it paints you as a leader, as a person who's arrogant and self-serving. Learn to say thanks. Way to go. Hey, great job. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate you doing it. And people that don't do that can just plan on bidding farewell to talented people. If you want talented people working for you, I've always said that really one great trick to success in our business is that I've hired people that are smarter than me to run the business. You know, that's sort of a get your ego in check kind of situation, but you got to do that. If you want the business to be successful, you want the smartest guys you can find in there. If they're smarter than you in some area, great, fine with me. I like having smart people there. Here's another thing. If you want people to just be unmotivated in your company and not encouraged about things, keep them in the dark. Don't ever tell them anything. I never understood this completely. Well, I understand it. I don't think I've ever done this. I don't think I've ever been tempted to do it, but I've been around, I've worked for people that have done it, and I've been around other people that do it all the time. They sort of see knowledge as power, and somehow by hoarding knowledge to yourself, I don't know if it's job security or what, you kind of keep it to yourself and you only tell people what you just absolutely have to tell them. You keep them in the dark most of the time. But what you're really saying when you do that, you're being disdainful of your employees. You're being disdainful of them, and they don't like it. It also pays terrible benefits in the end. I know that I've told this story before, it was a joke, but you know, I've had situations where not even purposely doing it, I've done this accidentally with people. We'd have some great promotion going on in years past at our company. We were selling a great seminar and we're inviting people. And I spent a lot of marketing money getting it done and had all our sales guys just out doing all this great stuff. But we forget to tell the person that's answering the phone what we're doing. And so what happens is, you know, it's exactly what you don't want to happen. Your marketing and your sales efforts are successful. Somebody calls up to reserve a spot in that seminar, and the person on the phone is clueless what they're talking about. Like, you want to sign for what? They never heard of it because we didn't bother to tell them, bring them into the fold on that. We've learned over the years to stop doing that. But if you're doing it, make a point of being sure that people know what you're doing. You know, that one of the seminal books to me, and I mentioned it here before, was a book written years ago called Moments of Truth by a guy named Jan Carlson. He was at that time president of SAS Airlines. And he kind of started this pushing decision-making down the ranks philosophy that later became copied by a lot of people. But he was sort of the seminal guy getting that going. And you know, the idea was, in the airline industry where he was working, what he found was is that customers were unhappy because the people, the ticket agents, couldn't do anything to help them. The organization was disdainful of those people, didn't trust them, didn't tell them anything, and so they were not able to deal with the customers. And by the time, of course, they had to get an upper-level management involved, the thing had already escalated to this giant fiasco down there. So what he did was shove it down to the employees and say, you can make these decisions yourself to satisfy a customer. And customer satisfaction went way up with that airline, the idea of being doing that, of letting them know. You know, it's insecure people that will not delegate authority and will not delegate decision-making down. You should push decision-making down in your company as low as it can go. Now, that doesn't mean to abrogate your responsibilities, but you should be sure that the people dealing with your customers have all the authority they need to deal with that customer. The other thing, if you value employees, if your point for employees is to mainly be docile and never talk back to you, I can tell you, you come around our company, you would not find that to be the case. Our employees are privileged to tell me anything, but that's the way I like it. Because if you have smart, talented people working for you, they're going to have their own ideas. They're not going to automatically bow down when you walk in the room and suggest that we ought to do things this way. They may fire back at you. But you know what? You need that. Because if your ideas are not good enough to get past your own employees, well, the customers probably aren't going to take them either. So be sure that you do that. Don't fear an empowered workforce. Don't fear that. Deal with them and make sure that you're getting all of those things done. You know, I love a quote by Jim Collins who says that the moment you feel the need to tightly manage someone, you made a hiring mistake. People don't need to be managed. They need to be guided, but they don't need to be tightly managed. And you know, people that work in a company, smart people sort of just intuitively figure out a leader or a manager in that company who's self-serving, who sees the institution or the business or the organization, whatever it is, as a means of self-aggrandizement instead of like working toward a common goal to meet company goals or organizational goals and so forth. People are very, very smart at figuring that out. And so people don't like it when you start pushing them around and telling them what they should do. Okay, now let's say for a minute, let's say your business is in trouble. You're kind of dropping down here a little bit. Things have gotten not so hot there at your company. Well, there's a couple things you can do. You can start controlling cost for one thing. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Don't go crazy with that. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish when you're doing that. You know, we're a field service organization, or at least we make a lot of our revenues off field service in our company. One of our primary costs, our biggest cost, is personnel cost. We have very talented people work for us. Well, you know, let's say that we got in some trouble and I wanted to cut cost. Well, if I go in there and cut out the people that are doing the field service, that is our revenue. I mean, what have I done there? I basically have cut our revenues as well. But surprisingly, a lot of companies do exactly that. They go in there and cut their core competency out in an attempt to control cost. Now, cost problems are real problems. Hopefully, you would be smart enough to deal with that before it got to a crisis level. But at some point, I mean, you may have to control costs. There's no question about that. Here's the other thing, though. You know, you cannot cut yourself out of a decline. You can't cut yourself out of a decline. You have to grow out of a decline. Those are two things altogether. So if you're going to cut costs for people, be sure you're doing it right. You know, if you're in a small business especially and you find yourself that your business is down a little bit, be truthful with your employees, but stay positive. I mean, in the first place, they already know. They're not stupid. They already know what's going on. So they want to hear you admit it. So admit it. Tell them, hey, we're not doing that great here. But do it in a positive fashion. You know, if you are depressed, they're going to bail because they're looking to you. They're going to get very, very, very nervous if they see the leader depressed. So don't let yourself do that. You owe it to them to stay positive, to work your way out of it. And, you know, the idea is, look, as a team, we have a great team here. We can make things happen. We got to all pull together. Just be truthful. Just shoot straight with people. Tell them what to do. You know, there are companies that have absolutely had to ask their employees to take pay cuts. Now, I've never had to do that, but there are people that have. And in many cases, the employees will do it as long as they trust the boss. If they trust him, that he's got their interest at heart, that he's not a hypocrite. He's taking a cut too. And he's suffering right there with them. And he's got a plan to get out of it. They'll actually stay with you getting out of that. More to come on one more segment of Driven to Business. Going to go over a little more what to do if you find yourself kind of down a little bit and you need some encouragement. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in just a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Hope you've enjoyed the program today. We're talking about kind of how to bounce back if you're down, how to encourage not only yourself, but your employees, because businesses do go through cycles where they kind of, you know, things get a little tense at times. I always enjoyed hearing stories of other companies that have bounced back. I learn a lot from that. It helps me. You know, one of them that I think is a very interesting story is the story of the Polaris company. Now, we don't get enough snow over here in Atlanta to own snowmobiles, so most of us don't buy snowmobiles. But Polaris company started off building snowmobiles. But what happened to them, there was a couple of years where there was a bit of a drought, and the area they're in, the snow levels went down quite a bit. So they decided they had to get into something else. And among the things they did, they began building a motorcycle. You know, they already know how to make the engines and so forth and so on. They built a motorcycle, and they ended up with a new CEO, things were just not going well. They ended up with a new CEO, and he was walking the floor, went out in the plant to see the motorcycles, and he asked, well, the employees right there, he said, hey, how much does Polaris earn on every unit? And the employee said, well, truth of the matter is we lose about $3,000 on every unit that we build. And the guy said, well, I hope they're good motorcycles. The employee said, they really aren't. Well, at least the guy kept his job. At least there's an honest employee out there. But later, when the J.D. Power and Associates did a study of motorcycles, Polaris's Victory motorbike ranked dead last. And yet, just a few years later, Polaris was rated the highest quality motorcycle in its class. And when the CEO was asked, how'd you do that? The CEO just said, it's in our DNA. And what he's talking about there is a culture of success, a culture of success, not a culture that ignores problems, not a culture that doesn't make mistakes, and not a culture that always knows the exact right thing to do, but a culture that regardless of anything, figures it out. If you make a mistake, you back up, pick yourself up, dust it off, and go at it again. And that's exactly what they did. And you know, if you've got a company, let me tell you, our company is very much like that. The company I'm privileged to work for is very much like that. And it's a pleasant experience to work for a company like that. It's a lot better working for somebody like that than working for somebody who can't get things going and who all sort of go in a corner and all huddle up and cry together when things get tough in the company. That's not a thing to do. All right, here's a few things to do that, let's say you do find yourself down a little bit. Here's a few things to do. Here's one of them. Stay true to yourself and don't chase other people. You know, benchmarking is a great idea. Benchmark is when you look around and you see how somebody else is doing something and you say, okay, I can do it that way too. But there's a problem with benchmarking and there's some lost opportunities with benchmarking. Maybe instead of doing that, that's not always a bad thing to do. You know, instead of you having to reinvent the wheel, look at a similar company, how they do that. Okay, maybe we can do it that way and, you know, not have to go through all that learning curve ourselves. That's a fine thing to do. Be wise about it, but it's a fine thing to do. On the other hand, if you're one of the things you should sit down and do is try to figure out, what are our strong capabilities? What are we really good at that other people are not good at? And what do we do better? Well, that's a better way to look at it. What do we do better? And instead of benchmarking with that, trade sort of the benchmarking for capabilities and come up and say, let's spend our time building the handful of sort of distinctive capabilities that we have that we're better at than anybody else. Think about the Apple company for a second. Apple's a great example of this. I think, I'll probably quote this wrong, I've got it written down somewhere. Steve Jobs said a long time ago Apple for a long time was sort of tied into a battle with Microsoft. And you could almost say that they lost that battle. You know, the Mac, you had the Mac and the PC. And the PC definitely did not get the market share. The Mac did not get the market share the PC did, although many people would argue the Mac was vastly superior. Jobs certainly argued that, but it didn't happen. But what Jobs began to realize and actually said this later was that Apple didn't have to beat Microsoft. Apple needed to remember who Apple was. Apple's not Microsoft. Apple's a different kind of company. And because of that, that's where you started having things like the smartphones and things that Microsoft did not have. And, you know, had Apple stayed in that PC business, the computer, the personal computer business, competing with Microsoft, I don't know they'd still be in business. But because of the fact they remembered who they were, they had this incredible, they had some strengths of innovation and so forth that nobody else had there with them. One of the things you can also do if you're there is put your culture to work. I mentioned earlier about what the guy at at Polaris said that solving problems and success is in their DNA. Make sure it's in your DNA. If you've got whatever culture you've got there, if you got, I hope you built a good culture at your company. Put that culture to work. Figure out the things your culture can do other people can't do, and stop worrying so much about restructuring and things of that sort, and get that done. And invest. I know that's a scary thing to do sometimes when perhaps revenues have dropped off a little bit. But here's the deal: be sure you invest where it matters. There are things you can take costs out of always. I'm told that almost anybody could cut 10% of costs out of their company. I sometimes wonder about that, but that's what you do read. Most managers will say that. But be careful where you do it. Instead of what some large companies will do, which is dilute their investment dollars by starting up a whole bunch of new products, very surgically and strategically cut costs so that it doesn't hurt your revenues, and then redirect the monies to invest in your core capabilities. Again, I use the example. We're a company that we make a lot of our revenues in field service. If we talk about cost cutting, are not going to start cutting costs in our technician salaries. That's something we're not going to do because I need the best and brightest guys I get my hands on. So we don't do that. And when we do invest, we invest in our core capabilities, things that we are good at doing better than anybody else. And that allows us to grow and get stronger. Those are the kinds of things that I think any of us need to learn how to do. You know, there are several companies that really did thrive during a recession. One of them you probably all know is Domino's. Domino's actually admitted in an ad campaign on national television that their pizzas weren't very good. They actually came out to advertise that. And the way they said it was, we've fixed this. You know, I used to kid about you go there and, you're eating cardboard crust. Well, they fixed that. I haven't used the Domino's for a while, and I did just a few weeks ago, and I was really rather shocked at how good that was. They did a great job of turning themselves around, and they turned completely around in that and have really done much better. Another one you see around is the Ford Motor Company. You know, it wasn't too many years ago, Ford was in really dire straits, and a lot of us all know about the federal government bailout of GM, where Ford did not take that money and so forth. And Ford is an innovative company. I don't know if you've been in a Ford vehicle recently, but in terms of electronics, I ended up renting one out in Arizona, and I was really surprised when I got the car. It was a Taurus, a very well-equipped Taurus with all the latest and greatest electronics in it. I was astonished at the technical innovations in that vehicle. Just inside there's unbelievable. You know, you could and maybe there are other cars can do this, but it surprised me. You know, you could say, you could give verbal commands to the radio there was a ball game we wanted to see. So I said, find, and I named the ball game, and the dad blame thing found it. It's amazing that it can, and I know they're not the only people who can do that, but it's amazing to do things like that. You can give it a voice command to set the cruise control. Okay, do you have to give a voice command to set cruise control? Probably not, but it does tell you that company's very innovative. They did a great job, and Ford's become a great company by coming out of almost bankruptcy and by restructuring themselves and doing the things that they needed to get done. You know, one of the great things about going through a tough time is we can learn, we get better from it. Think about exercising. You know, it hurts to exercise, but after you do it, you're stronger and better. You've been listening to Driven to Business. Hey, catch the podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. I am Eddie Mayfield. This is Driven to Business, and I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.